Welcome to the Sideshow Podcast.
Sideshow aims to be the most fun streaming service on Earth.
And quite possibly the only fun streaming service on Earth. We're as much of a carnival as we are a video platform. Sideshow has unique shows, kinds you won't find on any other streaming service.
Like a series of one-minute horror videos hosted by a vampire puppet.
Game shows where anyone can play and win prizes. And built-in interactivity and all kinds of secrets you can unlock. In this podcast, though, at least for these first three episodes, I'll be interviewing the creators of some of Sideshow's original series. I'll be revealing some of Sideshow's secrets. And, maybe most importantly, I'll be looking for an answer to the burning question I have right now. What should this podcast be?
My name is Chris Blair. I'm the creator of Sideshow. And unlike the founders of pretty much every other streaming service, I am most definitely not a tech person. Like, at all. Just creating the basic version of the site, I can't tell you the amount of time I spent on the Squarespace forums and Googling things I didn't understand. I am a filmmaker, an improviser, and a teacher. And everyone else working on Sideshow too are also filmmakers and artists. There are so many streaming services right now, and by that I mean so many. Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, Crackle, Showtime, Comedy Central, there's two HBO ones for some reason, Tubi. I mean, I can just keep going on and on listing them. And a lot of times when I tell people about Sideshow, the initial reaction is something like, another one? And to that I say, fair. It's overwhelming, and it's leading to something being coined as streaming fatigue. And that's because A, pretty much all these streaming services are interchangeable. Very, very similar, the only difference being the specific content on them. Should I get the one that has Barry on it, or should I get the one that has Ratchet on it? And B, just like with TV, it's a very passive experience. It's just content that's being thrown at you. So I have no interest in Sideshow being another streaming service. I want it to be an alternative to them. So with that, I have these three main missions. The first mission is to be the most fun streaming service that exists. Now, usually fun streaming service, that's an oxymoron. But as I've said, we're just as much of a carnival, very interactive, and we have all sorts of opportunities where anyone can play on one of our game shows, can make decisions within the series, attend Q&As with creators and casts, get invites to special events like show parties, writer rooms, even getting to be on set, participating on the shows, and more than that, a lot more to come. We're doing this with our whole ticketing system, which I'm going to get into more a little bit later on the podcast. Mission number two is to share as much control with the viewers as possible. You get a say in what shows get made, which continue, and no show can be canceled by us if you pull together and save it. And mission number three is to stay outside of the mainstream. You aren't going to be seeing more of the same here. We don't want shows that are going to feel mind-numbing or just be distracting ourselves from our lives. We want ones that are going to be thought-provoking and lifting our imaginations. Series that can be described as weird, dark, experimental, artistic, or trippy? That's our jam. And what a perfect segue to our first interview. It's with the cast and crew of the first ever original Sideshow series, The Madams. Cast and writers, Alana Webster, Casey Owens, and Dean Milos. And producers from SheTV Media, Meredith Yinger and Natalie Perez.
You think you know me? You think you want it? You think you know me? You think you want it? You think you know me? You just wanna put me off.
How's creation over there in Southern California right now?
It's good. I mean, we're writing. We've still got our hands in a couple of different pots in terms of coming up with new episodes for the season. So I would say all of our cylinders, our creative cylinders, are flying over here. And then I know that Meredith and Natalie have been kicking ass on all of their respective projects.
I actually wanted to start off by just kind of sharing a story about my origins with the Madams. Because when we were first starting Sideshow, at that time known as Candy Van, like old school name, we had done a call out for just content for different TV shows, and we got a huge response from people, and we actually had this way of just rating all the shows that we were possibly going to go with on a scale of 1 to 5, just different attributes like how much we like the idea, how well it fits in with the brand, all of those things. And the Madams was the only one that got 5, 5, 5, 5, 5s across the board. And there was lots of great things, but it had one problem, and that was that it was one of the few productions that did not come with a producer on board.
Yes.
So we're like, we want to go with this so bad, but we don't know what we're going to do because we're not down there and doesn't have a production with it. But then when the three of you found Natalie and Meredith, that was the best.
Yeah, good things come to those who wait. And also Woosa, because we were definitely freaking out a little bit. So yeah, finding SheTV, finding Meredith and Natalie was truly a godsend. And I think the best fit for this project and what we wanted to do with this project, both in front of and behind the camera. Like our dreams came true in so many ways when we linked up with them.
I was going to say good things come to those also who scroll through their Instagram feed at 1 a.m. No, it's cool. I actually worked with Natalie on, Natalie, did we work on 1 or 2 projects before this?
I think we worked on a few, but they might've been part of the same series.
Yeah.
It was like, for this like little micro series called The Valley, which actually I'm wearing the shirt for right now.
Represent!
Yeah, and that was, you were shooting on film, right? Like actual film. Yeah. And I remember we just came off of this piece we were shooting in an auditorium, and I was in a prom dress and I was like pregnant trying to hide it. I remember that. But it was funny, physically hide it in my prom dress. But yeah, we had a little bit of a producer hiccup, just trying to figure out what the heck are we going to do. And it's funny that I couldn't sleep. It was like 1 a.m. I was like, oh my gosh, freaking Natalie. I was like, oh my gosh, it's SheTV, Natalie. So I sent her a message and it was, it was all, it was
the rest is history, as they say in Hollywood.
Yeah, it was really cool. It's a small community. I mean, it's big. LA's big. There's a ton of us, but the community is small when it comes down to it. And we're so lucky and honestly blessed. I hate the hashtag blessed, but it's a blessing to have us as a team together and you guys, SheTV. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's wonderful.
No, it came at the right time for us too. This is Natalie talking from SheTV. And just a quick overview, SheTV is our full service video production company. And so it was perfect timing for us too, because we had a bunch of, projects under our belt, and a lot of them were a bit more like documentaries, more like, how should I say, like serious, not serious, but a little bit more on the serious side. So then heavy, and when you brought up the Madams to us, we were like, whoa, this sounds so fun. Like, we just need a break. And it was like it came at the perfect time. And we were like, you know what? Yes, like, let's do it. And so, as you said, the rest is history. And we came on board. It was an awesome experience. And, we all like just put our heart and soul into this project, and being all of us wearing multiple hats, many, many hats, basically we're the entire crew, but there was other people as well. Lots of very helpful people. But
was that like, would you consider it a negative thing or a positive thing? I know there's kind of both, like there's a lot to do when you're having to take care of everything on set, but also you get a little more aspect of like control and getting into a more unified vision.
I think that, can you hear me? This is Meredith.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was a positive for this for a couple reasons. Because one, this is the dream team that you're listening to, looking at, whatever. So there, everyone was like so on board with the everything that they needed to be, and the commitment was there. And it wasn't like you had one person that was like, ugh, dragging anyone down. It was like very much like, what do we need to do? How can we make this happen? Who has, you know, a robe that's silky? Like, what can, you know, how can we put all these pieces together and like just accomplish what we got to do in the time that we have, mm-hmm. you know, and really just do it. So I feel like that was really great. And then also it made communication a lot easier because it was like everyone on board. Cool. You know, we're not running through a bunch of different decision makers or people that we had to get approval for. We were like, if you approve this, we're gonna do it.
I think when you're forced to wear so many hats, it keeps you really engaged and focused in the project. And when we were going, we were all really synced up and we were just going. And we were determined to produce a really, really great project. And I think the needing to like switch off between like a baseball cap and a fedora made the project just so much richer in the end, because I feel like there was a lot of our souls that were put into it, but also a lot of small touches of our personality as well.
I take a step back and ask like how you originally came up with this concept for the Madams.
It's so funny. I was looking through my files to see when, Alana, you and I had the earliest date of what we were messing with concept-wise. Mm-hmm. And I found something from 2013 where...
I believe it.
Where Alana and I were in an acting class together. Mark Tillman, he's this amazing teacher. He's a casting director. And we actually like kind of conned him into playing our
father. He plays our dad on the show.
Bruce! But anyways, we were in class together and we're like, we need... let's do a project where it's, let's do something where it's two sisters doing something. And we kicked around ideas for them. We're like, okay, let's have them, you know, start their own business. And we jumped around, and then Alana, I think we were at a Starbucks and I remember you saying something about an escort agency, mm-hmm. and we're like, what? And yeah, it's cool. But yeah, it changed a little bit over the course of a year or 2 years.
Yeah. But, Casey, like at the core, Casey and I were in this acting class together and we would never really work together. Mm-hmm. And so initially it came from just us wanting to be in a scene together to then going, well, let's just write our own project so we can work together long term for a while. And then at the time we wanted to come up with something that was sexy and fun and different. And there was really nothing like the Madams on TV. And we were like, okay, well, what about this angle? And what about this way of storytelling that's very female relationship centered as opposed to romantic relationship centered? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we also wanted to create a project that allowed us to act in our unique styles. Sometimes being in an acting class and doing the LA working actor thing, I don't know if you can relate to this case, but like can feel kind of stunting, if you will. Mm-hmm. Like in terms of acting style, it can feel quite dry. And Casey and I both have our very unique ways of performing. And we wanted to put that in a project where it was front and center. And we felt free to tell a story that we wanted to and emote and perform in the ways that we felt were most natural to us, and speak in ways that were most natural to us, and do characters that we could really relate to and see ourselves in.
I'll just jump in real quick. Sorry. I believe Casey and Alana both created the concept of the show back in 2013, it sounds like. But I came along, I believe Casey was like spring of 2017 when you and I met up to talk about it for the first time. And Casey and I had worked on a pilot before called Life Coach, where she played the lead. That as well, and I had such a great time talking to Case and working with her that I was like, oh, let's, you know, catch up and see how things are going. And I was kind of going through some personal stuff and I needed something to kind of distract me from my personal life. And Casey was like, well, I have this project with my friend Alana. It's about two sisters who have an escort service. And I was like, oh, that's nothing I would ever sign up for, but why not? Let's try it. Like, I know nothing about anatomy or sex work or any of that. I'm kind of somebody who kind of gravitates more toward like broad comedy stuff. Like all the like Digby stuff in the show is kind of my creation. Like that happens. That was my main contribution. So then I came along and we kind of like retooled the script that the two of them had put together. And we added more characters, added a bit more broad comedy, and then it went from there. So I came along I guess 3-4 years into the process.
We desperately needed Dean. Yes. We desperately needed Dean's comedy chops.
Dean has a wonderful levity. And I tend to write horror and drama and crime. So it's like, it was a really wonderful levity that helped to balance out what we had originally, what we penned.
Sometimes working like sisters, we need that extra force to like pull us together. And Dean was definitely that force.
Yeah. But really gentle, like, oh, well, how about this? And we're like, oh, yeah, sure.
Exactly. Ladies, we need deadlines. Okay, a deadline. Yes, we can follow in line with that.
That's one thing that like really grabbed me about the show is, for one, it portrays sex workers in not a negative sort of light, but a really kind of open-minded, humanizing sort of way, but at the same time, not taking itself over seriously, having a lot of levity in it, which I thought just had such a great balance. How is taking this thing that you wrote, that was your baby, that you've been working on for years, and actually making it into a physical media product?
It was bonkers, dude. We couldn't believe it happened until it actually happened. I don't know if anyone else felt like that, but the entire time I was pinching myself like, is this really happening? Is this really our script? Did we really do this? Are we really shooting? All the way up until we wrapped.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I have a lot of friends, I'm sure we all do, who are like, yeah, I have this idea for this project, whether it be, you know, a feature, a series. And it's not for a lack of being intentional. I guess I want to be careful with that, but it's hard to get something from brain to pen or, you know, type to actually rolling on it. And that's really cool. I think it's a really cool and, you know, I think sadly, unique position to be able to say, we had this thing that we fostered and we, you know, poured out our guts for it, and we actually got to have it created and got to roll on it. And it's sad that that's a tough thing to do. And I think at the end of the day, it's wonderful to say, yeah, we all put on hats, we did what we needed to do, and we freaking did it. And that's it's weird. I look at our poster, I look at our you know, different film submissions, festival submissions, and I'm like, wow, we actually got this thing made, and there's more in the can, and that's cool. Like, it's, I don't believe it sometimes.
Casey and I decided, go for it.
Oh, I was just gonna jump in and say, I think honestly, a large part of that was Candy Van, aka now Sideshow.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, Sideshow, you guys really believed in the project, and that I think boosted the confidence and the, you know, energy around the project. And then obviously with the budget, you know, even no matter what the budget would have been, any form of like that, you know, confidence in the project was so beneficial, and that really got the ball rolling and us just like, all right, we're gonna make this happen. Let's just put, you know, our creative energies together and figure it out. And I just wanted to bring up one moment that I really loved seeing the three of you guys, you know, your faces, was when we had our first internal screening. You guys came over and actually sat down and watched the first, you know, version of the edit. And Can you guys explain? Because like I like took pictures and it was awesome just to see your faces. But like, what was going through your mind when you saw like the edit for the first time?
I mean, once that like that song by, you know, Kia and hit it and it started, I was like, oh my gosh, it's being scored. Oh my gosh, there's Alana / Logan packing her car.
It was a surreal moment. I think being in a town like Los Angeles where everyone has a great idea and everyone has a great script, but a lot of them don't get made. It was this feeling of like, we actually did it. Like we, like it's made, it's real. It's not just something we can talk about in sort of squishy, non-existent terms. Like it's an actual
thing. Tangible on that screen.
Yeah. So unbelievable is the way that I would say I felt. And I remember sort of driving home on a cloud and almost feeling like, oh my God, I could just like speed and float away down the 110 heading back towards Pasadena. I was just full of so much life and like bliss. It was a very exciting moment.
I think that was awesome.
Oh, dear.
The first time I saw the pilot, I just remember being excited for Casey and Alana because I was like, this was their baby and it's real now. And it had such great energy and it turned out so well because, you know, all of us have probably been on projects that, you know, in theory they sound good and maybe they don't turn out so well and, you know, you're kind of like embarrassed by it or, you know, or this could have been better, that could have been better. But with our pilot, I thought like everything turned out like 10 times better than I ever dreamed. It could have, like all the characters were great and the story was engaging, the pace was great, there was amazing music, it looked great. I was like I wanted to watch more of the show, even though I knew like all the work that had gone into it. I was like, oh, I want to see what happens next. So that's how I felt. I was just excited and grateful.
Dean, this is your baby too. This is your little adopted brown baby.
Yeah.
Your baby too now. I was like, oh, no, you're in there. surrogate daddy in there.
Well, I'm really glad.
Two of you gave birth to it.
I'm glad that Natalie brought up Candy Van because there were times where like sometimes it felt like the only motivation we had was like someone is interested. Candy Van is interested. When everything else was seeming dark, Candy Van was interested. And I think that in a lot of ways that kept us going through those slow or like unsure periods. So
And Chris, like we really again want to thank you for your intentionality and just like I said, just being intentional in getting Candy Van / Now Sideshow off the ground. Like it's very rare to come across an entity that's like, hey, we are going to do this and you know, you've just plugged away too, and again, like that confidence to know you have full intention of funding this thing, of helping us produce this thing, and that, like Alana's saying, like that's been the backbone of like, okay, there's somebody, there's someone out there that believes in us outside of, you know, our little bubble and our moms and our you know, our sisters, maybe brothers, you know. So yeah, thank you again.
Yeah, for sure.
Say that enough.
Yeah, well, and thank you for bringing this to life. Like one comment I've been getting a lot when people have been coming in and checking out the Madams, people have been like, wow, these are like real shows on here. So
yes, you have a great eye for talent and picking scripts. Absolutely.
Well, thank you guys so much. I
we're all like it's so positive. Like it just
we gotta gas you, Chris. We gotta gas you in the process.
Well, it is so cool, and everything has taken me 3 times longer than planned to. Because originally I'm like, yeah, we're gonna have this all up in 2018, and then reality sets in, and everything takes so much longer. But I'm like, it makes me so happy to look and see, like, oh yeah, Madams exists. It's on the network. Like, where are you right now with the Madams, if you can share?
Yeah. Well, right now we're just retooling our season one overall outline. We've just added little seeds here, adding characters there, taking some out, moving people in. And we are, I'd say right now, we are getting our we've got some episode scripts that we're getting in shooting condition. So again, just looking at it, you know, time goes by and we're like, okay, cool. You know, let's put these seeds in there. Oh shoot, trickle down effect. So I'd say right now we're working on getting our next set of scripts. They're done. So we're now working on our next episodes, 5 and 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Long-term finishing up all of season one, in a weird way, this is going to sound strange. The pandemic is one of the best things that could have happened for the show just because everything slowed down. And so it's been giving us time to write and retool and prep things and ready things for shooting. So in that regard, we're just writing and working away.
Yeah, ready to hit the ground running. I mean, and when we say running, we mean like we're ready to film.
Right.
You know? Yeah. We've got everything in position, but yeah, we're handing it over to Natalie and Meredith. Like, okay, cool. This is just finish this set. So
yeah.
And I want to say for anybody listening who has not seen The Maddams yet, first of all, what are you doing? Go check it out. And second of all, you can help make more episodes happen by supporting it, giving it tickets, and that will help make more episodes happen. And I definitely need to know what happens next. So
we got some goodness.
We got some crazies going on.
I've got two questions that I'm asking everybody. First of all, part of my journey of this podcast is to figure out what this podcast is going to be. So in your opinion, what would you like to hear in this podcast?
I am always interested in stories about how someone, I guess the journey of someone completing their project. Like I always want to know the nuts and the bolts, like how that sausage was made. It's weird. I'm not a big documentary person. I have a hard time sitting with them, but I'll tell you what, if I am driving somewhere, if I'm, you know, on a really long run, I there's something really interesting hearing about people who have a tangible finished product and hearing what they did, the little, not even nuances, but like some of the hurdles they ran into, highlights and really just what they did to get their project created. There's something always interesting about, oh, we started this long ago and, you know, this thing turned into something, morphed into this, and then this is what we got. I like the sausage factory stories, or for my vegan and vegetarian friends, the I don't know, polenta factory stories. I'm always interested in that as a filmmaker. I'm trying to be inclusive here. I'm like, I don't know, what do you, I'm a ham.
I was gonna say, the thing that I kind of like to hear about more these days is perhaps in a reaction to kind of like the darkness of the world right now. I look for stories that are kind of uplifting, that give you like insight into people who are doing good things in spite of difficulties, you know, whether that's actors, creators like us, or people who are doing things that are outside of the creative realm. So anything that you can do to like put the spotlight on positivity, I think would be like quite welcome these days.
Yeah,
like how people are remaining creative amongst COVID kind of things. I love reading about that and how like it has been such a challenge, but like such great art and content has come out of this, and people are kind of getting, you know, working with what you got. So any kind of stories like that, I always love.
Yeah, I'm going to second that. I like hearing how people get things done specifically during this time. I do feel like once the pandemic surpasses, which feels like even just like a horrible thing to say because it feels like we'll never get out of it, I do think there's going to be a big art renaissance. So I am interested to know, how are people getting ideas? Where are they coming from? And how are they acting upon them? And how are they reaching us? I think that's a really interesting podcast episode. And I feel like it never gets old because there are so many interesting people in the world and so many interesting ideas that you'll have plenty of podcast material, plenty of episodes.
Those are awesome ideas. And, you know, those are definitely things I'm interested in too, especially people's creative process and how that unfolds. Last question is Netflix and chill. Is to Sideshow and what?
Vibe. Sideshow and Vibe. What's your vibe? Is it like a sexy vibe? Is it a solo vibe? Is it like a socially distanced vibe? Is it a creative vibe? Is it a hungry vibe? Like, what's your vibe? Let's talk about it.
Ooh, that's a, I'm nominating that. That's a good one. That's a good one. Like, I the posture for that is just this.
Like, my favorite Casey it. Posture.
It's my only one.
And for those who can't see Casey, her vibe is awesome.
I'm like leaning back in my drop top, but like, you know, driving with my knee. Yeah, it's a good, that vibe, that's good, Alana.
Yeah, I love that.
Ooh.
Natalie and Meredith, is there anything She TV is doing that you want to blast out?
Well, yes. One, we're just so thrilled that like the Madams is continuing, because this has just been like an honor and a privilege to work on with everyone and really to bring it to life, like in a partnership form, because I feel like the collaborative nature is very rare and it shouldn't be. But I feel like the way that like we all approached this is it was like very much like a collective community baby, if that makes sense. And I think that it was just really a great atmosphere on set, you know, and in production and everything to like work on together. So we're jazzed for the future of the Madams and what happens next. And we started reading the scripts and we're just like, ah, I'm so excited. But we also are developing, as She TV Media, our own video streaming platform called She TV Go that is hopefully coming to fruition in the future. But we really want to focus on also like minority voices and stories and content and put it out there in a positive and uplifting and supportive way. So that's something that we're hard at work at also.
So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us, Chris.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you.
Sideshow and Vibe, don't forget.
Sideshow and Vibe.
Sideshow is kind of like In-N-Out Burger. There's a secret menu. There are certain secret things, that will earn you special statuses and invites. I'm gonna reveal one of them right now. I guess making it not so much of a secret. But if before November 30th, 2020, you spend 100 tickets or more on the Sideshow site, you will get an invite to our special online kickoff party. Look out for more secrets. One thing that's not so much of a secret is that you can buy tickets on the Sideshow site, but all paid memberships do come with a set number of tickets, them varying depending on what membership you get. One of the things that you can do with the tickets is you can participate on our game shows and win prizes. These game shows, there's a lot of really fun ones, like Urban Dictionary Bee, where you're given a definition found on Urban Dictionary and you have to try to guess the right word. Scavenger Hunt, where you have to find items in your house. A lot more and a lot more coming. That's actually taking up a lot of my time right now. I'm producing most of the game shows by myself. So aside from the website, doing the game shows takes up a lot of time. Fortunately though, I have help in that each game show has amazing hosts. And again, what a perfect transition to our next interview. We've got the host of Urban Dictionary Bee, my friend and fellow improv teacher, Andy Feldman. So Andy and I are actually improv teaching colleagues.
Yes, I'm a former student of Chris's actually, and then I rose in the ranks to become a colleague.
Wow, that really is the quintessential American story. But now neither of us teach any improv because,
various reasons, you know, nothing too, yeah. You know, exotic.
In case anyone listening is unaware, there's a deadly pandemic going around right now called the coronavirus that's making live performances really difficult to do. Depending, I guess, in which state you're in.
But still all 50 states.
Yeah, it's still in all 50 states. It's just some of those 50 states care a little bit less than others.
True. And the same goes, like, it's all over the world, in fact. It's just some some countries care a little more than others. And it's a nightmare.
Yeah, it's, I would say, not a good situation.
No.
But I think that's one of those cool things about Urban Dictionary, B, is that it is surviving despite the fact, because everyone plays from home, and you know, anyone in the world technically can play, no matter what your the guidelines of where you live are. So
that's true. Yeah, we need to get the more of an international contestant base.
Yeah, you know, we had a couple international contestants on the other shows, but the only problem is, depending on the time zone, some people will have to wake up at like 2 or 3 in the morning to come play on the show.
I think it's worth it.
Yeah, I agree. If you're listening and you want to be on the show, and you're in a different time zone, we would love to have you. We film at usually around 4:30 or 5, 5:30 or 6 Pacific US.
Yeah.
But whatever time that is for you.
Yes. What would that be in other countries? Let's see, 5:30, 6:30, 7:30, 8:30, 9:30, 10:30, 11:30, 12:30, 1:30. Okay, so in London, that would be in the middle of the night.
I don't think we have a whole lot of London slang yet.
Bollocks. That's all I know.
That might be the extent of my London slang as well. So you're hosting the show. When in your life did you first decide you wanted to host something?
I don't think ever. That's not exactly true. I guess in the olden times when we could do improv in front of a live audience, Endgames Improv had the show Thunderdome, which is a improv cage match show where two teams go up against each other and the audience votes for who gets to come back next week. And when that got started, there were always people playing characters when they hosted. Like I remember Julie Katz did it once, and she was like an office manager. Gabe Sanchez and Dana Merwin were like a weird old BFF couple doing stuff. That was really funny. I think I was just looking for a way to become more ingrained into the community. So I had this standby character, Ricky Rampage, who was basically a blatant ripoff of Jack Sparrow, who is a drunk wannabe 80s rock star who's always slurring and passing out every which way, and thought that would make a good Thunderdome host, so I did that.
Do you still have any of that Ricky Rampage? Is that like a piece of you?
At this point, yeah, unfortunately. I don't know. Like when I become that character, I really become that character, and it can be exhausting once I'm out of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about playing characters that I've noticed too, is like, they can be, they can take on a life of their own.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I still have my inhibitions. I know that much. Like I know right from wrong, but you know, just taking on that physicality and talking that voice. I think the longest I've been Ricky Rampage was 4 or 5 hours at like a Halloween party. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. What is it like though? Because you're yourself when you host Urban Dictionary, B.
Yeah.
Is that a different sort of process than hosting in character?
It definitely was to start. I think I remember being actually pretty nervous about hosting the first one because I didn't have the character to fall back on. It's weird because, you know, I do improv for a quote unquote living. It's not for a living, but still.
As close to as someone can do it for a living, you do it.
Exactly.
But, you know, even then on stage, I'm playing a character, even if I'm just doing my normal voice and normal self, I'm playing a character, I'm with other people that I could, you know, that will support me and I can support them. So when it comes to just me doing something solo like that with all that responsibility on me, I think that can be a little nerve-wracking sometimes. And when it comes to like speaking, it's like, oh, okay, I gotta be charming as a host or something like that. I'm myself, you know, for the most part, not like playing a character there, but you kind of have to, or I kind of have to play a character a little bit in order to not, I don't know, go crazy and crawl into under the desk and curl up into a little ball and become the introvert that I secretly am.
Not that much of a secret.
Is there moments where you've gotten close to that?
Usually when the words that come up on the show are enough to make me blush, you know, not that I'm like I'm pretty repressed, but there have been some words where it's like, oh god, I gotta A, say this word in front of people I don't know and define this word and use it in a sentence, and it's like, oh, I no.
Also on camera, which can be displayed to anybody.
Yes. I can't say for certain if I have turned beet red on camera, but I wouldn't be surprised if that did happen.
Oh, I can verify you have. Yeah. But
good. Thank you. Good to know.
Those are my favorite reactions, though, when you're about to read a word and then you realize what the word, what definition you're giving. It's so good. Such these fun reactions, especially when the contestants will make you repeat a sentence or a definition several times.
I wonder if, like, I'm sure, like, at least a quarter of them do that on purpose just so that beet red color stays. Like, really? I don't want to describe butt stuff for the 15th time. You serious? You know what butt stuff is. Just say it.
Just wants to be really, really sure it's butt stuff. Yeah, there's been some interesting words in there. I know I've learned a lot of different ones.
Yeah, I know I've managed to block out a lot so far. Although I just remembered Red Wings and I thought I had blocked that out.
Oh, yeah, Red Wings, yeah.
And it's not so much like, you know, what the definition of the word, like, I don't care. People do whatever you want to do. Not that every word is like explicitly sexual, but do what you're going to do, whatever floats your boat, that's fine with me. But just when you put a term to it, it's, I don't know. For me, that's strange. It's like, how, what's the thought process? It's like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to name this.
Yeah, no, I think it's got to come from someone wanting to describe something that happened, realizing that there's not a word for it yet. And then.
And then going, oh, finally, my opportunity to come up with a new word, hooray.
Yeah, like I guess a claim to fame in a way, although
no one claims that fame.
Yeah, no one raises their hand and said, like, I came up with the term teabagging.
Yeah, that's an interesting process. It's an anonymous contribution to the world that we made.
It's like, and we applaud you for those who like came up with these terms, but why?
They're the unknown soldiers of the internet slang world, I guess.
Webster's Army.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing too, is going through and trying to collect words for them. It's sometimes a process of like trying to figure out, okay, is this a word
anyone will ever know? Or is this something one person made up and the author alone in this is aware of its meaning?
Yeah, I think it's impossible to tell. I mean, I guess you can tell in Urban Dictionary if there's like only one definition or one comment or something like that. No, like fan submitted stuff.
Yeah, usually I'll have to Google some words I'm uncertain about and see if they come up in other contexts. And now my Google history is horrendous.
This is why I leave all of that to you, Chris, and I just read the words.
Although sometimes when I find the most horrendous words or ones people don't agree with, the blame gets automatically transmitted to the host or people. Automatically...
This is true, which is why I constantly have to say I did not come up with this. It's not me. I just read the slip of paper that was handed to me.
Oh, yeah, and sometimes the sentence and multiple choice options.
You come up with the multiple choice options, though. You don't come up with the sentences, but you come up with the other two answers on the multiple choice.
Yeah, that I do. And, you know, it's kind of a process, too, of now that I'm doing that and coming up with these alternate names for them, I kind of want to contribute them to Urban Dictionary myself.
You have, it's like, you know what? I don't like this term. Let's call it this. You've had come up with some good ones. I mean, ones I prefer to the actual term.
What would be in an ideal situation, where does Urban Dictionary be go?
Game show network? I don't know.
Oh, that would be nice.
That would be pretty cool. I mean, I think... It's a good enough idea, and I think it's a really good selling point that it, you know, whether or not I'm still in the driver's seat as the host, I think it can go somewhere.
Oh, of course you would be.
It depends what whatever production company picks it up.
Listen, we are not getting Urban Dictionary without you. All right, you are now synonymous with Urban Dictionary.
Thank you. I'll take it.
So. Any plans for you throughout the rest of quarantine besides the Urban Dictionary?
Well, I could say this. I am currently plotting a podcast of my own that based on some short plays that I wrote and produced through Endgames, kind of Twilight Zone-esque anthology, weird dark comedies. With improvisers as the cast, turning that into a podcast, recording episodes as we speak, and hopefully by the end of the year that will be out. Depends how everyone's schedules line up and how long it takes me to work through the kinks. But I'm excited. Like, it's some of my favorite writing that I personally have ever done. So.
And you are a writer.
Yes, yeah, this is just for kicks. That is my, like, as much as I like being a game show host, being a writer is my dream job.
Exciting. Can't wait to listen, and we'll definitely let everyone know once it's available. So, Andy, where can people see you do improv?
Misconnections are basically a show that went on at Piano Fight in San Francisco. Improv based off Craigslist Misconnections happens every other Wednesday. I think at this point it's like probably the first and third Wednesday of the month, on Connor Allen's channel, which I do not know what the name of it is. It's on YouTube. Just
we'll put it in the show notes.
It's like B U Z E Y, a number. I'm a great marketer. All right. And then there's Improv All Stars every Saturday on the same channel. So you can find two improv shows on an unknown YouTube channel.
So there's two questions that I'm asking everybody that I'm interviewing.
Okay.
Part of this journey of this podcast is to find out what this podcast should be. So in your opinion, if you were to listen to a mm-hmm. streaming service podcast, what would you want to hear?
Besides like radio shock jock sound effects, that's not what I don't do that. I don't want that. that's actually a good question. I mean, like, I don't know. When it comes to like Urban Dictionary, if you could get like interviews with some of the champions or like, that'd be interesting, I think. Just to, like, where did you learn all of these words? How did you know about these?
Yeah, how do you know? We have one contestant who I believe has won every single time that he's been on.
Yes. Yes.
So he is unstoppable at this point. So yeah, if you want to take down David and come on the show and to do that, by all means.
He is our Holhauser of the moment, or our Ken Jennings.
So my other question is, Netflix and chill should be equivalent to Sideshow and what?
Snack.
Yeah. I like the alliteration there too. Yeah.
Yeah. I like Netflix and chill that has the internal rhyme with the eh, Netflix and chi. So yeah, Sideshow and snack I think works, but it's snack spelled with a C.
Ooh. Okay. Okay. All right. I'm into this.
Yeah. Knack.
Sideshow and Knack. Done. All right. So
yes.
Andy, thank you so much for being on this podcast. Please check
him
out.
Thanks for having me.
Urban Dictionary B, which is on the Sideshow Network. He is a great host, and even better, come be on the show.
Yeah, please do. It's a lot of fun. It really is.
Thank you for joining me for the first ever Sideshow podcast. I'd love to know what you think the podcast should be. You can let me know by going to the Sideshow website, which is Sideshow.com, that's Sideshow with a C, or our social medias at Twitter, Sideshow TV, same for Instagram, and participating in our poll. If you do, I'll give you a shout out on this podcast. And if you haven't yet, go to Sideshow and start participating in the spectacle. I'd like to thank our guests, Casey Owens, Alana Webster, Dean Milos, Meredith Yinger, Natalie Perez, and Andy Feldman. There will be another podcast episode soon with plenty more, including an interview with the creators of the show, The System. Until then, keep on sideshow and vibing, or sideshow and snacking, whichever you prefer.